Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Episode 3, Dracula's Curse. Now, Chris Hoffman is usually the one who gets things started, but he's not here. He's gone to E3 to play all the new games and left me here at Power Pros HQ all by my lonesome. But we didn't want to miss this week's episode, so please excuse the fact that it's a one-man show this week. I also didn't want to wait a week to talk about the Nintendo Digital Event, which I just watched before recording this. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot more information coming out of the show, maybe even some new game announcements. I don't know at this point. And I'm sure, I might not have all my facts straight yet as we find out more about the games that were shown, some more about their features, more about the development teams behind the games. So please bear with me if I slip up on something. Once Hoff is back next week, we'll be able to talk a lot more in depth about everything Nintendo showed. And he's actually going to be playing all the games, so he'll have a lot of hands-on impressions to give us, too. Now, before I get rolling, I should say that it isn't entirely true that I'll be doing the show alone this week. Before Hoff left, he pre-recorded a wide variety of reactions to cover every eventuality, which we've turned into a soundboard that I like to call the Hoffbot 9000. Say hello, Hoffbot.
I'm at E3, bitches.
Yeah, you are, you son of a bitch. Anyway, the Hoffbot will chime in with what I assume would be Hoff's reactions if he were here in the flesh. And I promised Hoff that I would treat his replacement with the utmost respect and only use his voice samples in appropriate situations.
Son of a bitch.
So, the Nintendo Digital Event. It seems like, from what I've seen online, the early reaction is pretty negative for this thing, and I totally get that. It wasn't as good as last year. It was pretty flat, but at the same time, I really want to play devil's advocate here a little bit and say that I thought the games they showed were great, but I'll get to why I think it was a bad show in a second. First of all, what did you think, Hoff?
Overall, it was a spectacular E3 Direct.
Oh, wait. Sorry, I pressed the wrong button.
Overall, it was a terrible E3 Direct.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be the prevailing opinion. But like I said, I think the problem was more in how they put this show together rather than in what they showed. And I guess I'm going to be sticking up for Nintendo a little bit here. The show clearly missed having Zelda Wii U. I don't know. I mean, they said it wasn't going to be at the show, so it shouldn't be a letdown that it wasn't. But they needed that big, killer, AAA title. And they had a lot of good games and a couple that looked really good, which we'll get to. But there wasn't that one kind of old crap game that everybody's going to be talking about. So, what can you do when you find out kind of late in the game, as they did, that they're not going to make their original release date and they have to pull it off of the year and bump it into 2016? I guess they filled it as best they could. But, I will say about that game, though, it was good news that Miyamoto confirmed that it is still coming to Wii U. A lot of people were speculating that it would be moved up to the NX console, Nintendo's next console. So it's nice to know that it's still on its way for Wii U, and hopefully that means it comes out sooner rather than later. I mean, they've been really vague with the release date, so have they even said 2016? I mean, that makes sense, but it's a little unnerving that they didn't show anything at this show when they did show footage for games that were going to be coming out early next year. So I guess that means, sheesh, I don't know, holiday 2016 for Zelda? I guess it's all just speculation right now. But so, like I said, there wasn't any big surprise old crap game. I mean, a lot of what they showed were games like Yoshi's Woolly World and Mario Maker, which we've seen multiple times. We saw a year ago at last year's E3. And although we saw more new stuff about them and some of the features were really, really cool, the thing that you really judge an E3 show by, whether it's a press conference or, as Nintendo puts it, a digital event, is it surprises. And there wasn't that one big killer surprise, although there were some little ones. And like I said, there were some highlights to the show. I do think the game lineup is really solid. And, maybe it would have helped presentation-wise if they'd saved some of the big Smash DLC announcements that they gave their own direct to a few days earlier. If they'd saved some of that for this press conference. I mean, revealing, Ryu and Lucas and Roy were all leaked beforehand, but I guess if we could assume that they hadn't been, or even if they had, the official reveal still would have added something to this Direct. What do you think, Hoff? Should they have saved the Smash DLC for this Nintendo Digital event?
E3 Direct is not the time nor the place for DLC.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that, but whatever. All right, so the event itself, it started with puppets. Puppets of Miyamoto, Reggie, and Iwata turning into Star Fox characters.
That part was ridiculous. I can't believe Reggie dressed up like that.
Well, it was a puppet. That was never. Star Fox Zero. It has a name. It's a real game. It looks like it's still coming out this year. It's a new Star Fox.
At last.
It's not a prequel or a sequel. They explain that it exists alongside Star Fox 64. They also classified it as a reimagining. So it sounds like a remake. Well, no, not a remake of Star Fox 64. That was Star Fox 64 3D. It sounds like they just took the very basic premise and characters and made a whole new game around it. I don't know why they didn't make it an official prequel or sequel. And it's confusing that it isn't a prequel with a name like Star Fox Zero. But whatever. Whatever you call it, it's Star Fox, and it looks pretty awesome. It's being co-developed with Platinum Games, and from what I've read so far, and again, this might be something where we get some more details over the next few days, but from what I've read so far, it looks like Platinum is handling the art, and Nintendo's heading the design, and I've read that some key people on the team at Platinum have actually moved temporarily into Nintendo headquarters to get this game done. I'm sure they're cranking on it because it seems like they hadn't even gotten a start at last year's show. And the director at Platinum is apparently the director from Bayonetta 2. So that's awesome. I mean, Platinum's a great, well-respected developer. I believe some people at Platinum had expressed interest in doing a Star Fox as a passion project like a year or two ago. And so this seems like a dream collaboration. And, you know, Platinum don't turn in bad games usually. So, and especially if Nintendo's still steering the ship. This looks like it's got a shot to be something really special. When I first saw the graphics, I didn't think they were the world's best graphics. Even for Wii U, I've seen prettier images. But there are still scenes that look spectacular. And even in, I guess, what you'd call the more normal scenes, the graphics are still very crisp and very smooth. They run at 60 frames per second, very colorful. And when you consider that, the game is running basically two completely different viewpoints on the Wii U gamepad and on the TV. It's totally understandable if the detail on the images aren't necessarily, you know, super ridiculous HD. Also, a part of it is down to just the design aesthetic. So overall, I'm pretty happy with it the more I look at it. They said they're focusing on a single-player experience. It's not going to have online multiplayer. But the game is listed as having up to two players. So this is one of those things we'll probably find out throughout the week, but I'm a little confused at the moment. Does that mean there's a mode where you can dogfight with another player? Or does this simply mean that if you wanted to, you could hand the gamepad to a friend and have them control the guns while you steered the ship? You know, I'm not sure exactly how that works out. But it's nice to know that there's some kind of multiplayer in there. And again, with the two screens, how it works is, and I'm sure you guys know by now, you fly independently you're controlling your ship by watching the path of it on the main screen while you you see, like, the gunner's point of view on the gamepad. And so there's two different perspectives. And also you can have, I think it's called target lock, where on the main TV, you lock onto a ship or a base or whatever your target is. And it's like the lock-on camera with anything else, you know, with like a Zelda game. So you don't lose sight of it. And when you combine that with the other two perspectives, I'm really excited that this could finally fix what I've always thought, at least for me, has been the main flaw of a flight combat game like Star Fox, is the problem of you just spend so much time turning around, trying to find where the enemy is, and then you finally see each other, and you kind of fly by each other, then you lose each other, and it's just a lot of the less exciting elements of flying around in air combat seem to be what fills up most of the time in games like this. As much as I've liked past Star Fox games, It's an element of it that I never really appreciated. So if using these camera modes and especially being able to lock on to things and also aim, like you can be flying forward, but aiming behind you or up or wherever, it just seems like it's going to be that much easier to stay engaged with the enemy and to keep things exciting and to really have fun. And we're going to cut out a lot of the kind of the time-wasting part of the action. So I'm super excited about that more than anything, because that's always been to me like, if they're going to reintroduce Star Fox, they have to fix that element of the gameplay. And as you would expect, it has both what appears to be on-rails segments. There might be some more branching there. Again, this is something we'll find out more about soon, I'm sure. And all-range mode, where you freely fly anywhere 360 degrees within a certain cordoned off battlefield area. And then another thing they're focusing on is transformations. Now, they showed the traditional R-Wing, the Landmaster tank from Star Fox 64, and a new vehicle, I believe, was called the Gyro Wing, that was paired. It was actually tethered to a little robot called the Direct Eye. And what's cool is that these vehicles seem very suited toward different types of levels. And even within those levels, the vehicles themselves can transform into different modes so that you can play the levels in different ways. For example, the R-Wing can turn into like a little, almost like a like robot chicken-looking R-Wing that can walk along on two legs on the ground. And they've said that, I believe they said in a Treehouse Live segment, that during these types of levels where you're the R-Wing, there'll be some places you can only get to in this other mode. So you'll be able to go find some secrets, presumably, by strategically switching between the two modes. And the Gyro-Wing vehicle, they showed a level where it was infiltrating a base. I think the main mission was similar to the plot of Star Wars. We have to go into the enemy base, find the shield generator, and destroy it. But to get to there, it was much more of a slow-paced, strategic approach to Star Fox, where the Gyro-Wing, which kind of has two propellers and can hover, would lower its little tethered robot down so the robot could then, at least as far as the cord connecting them will reach, could walk into little areas to hack computers and open gates, get you to go forward. You can even use that, lower the robot down to latch on to like a big crate, and then you can carry the crate around by the rope. So there's a lot more creative play there. So it seems like there's a broader variety of stuff in this Star Fox than before, which is exciting to see. Somebody made mention during the Treehouse Live demonstration that there's some kind of 3D audio technology in play. So it sounds, even from the speakers coming out of your gamepad, somehow they make it sound like your teammates are talking to you inside your helmet, which sounds pretty cool. And speaking of your teammates, it's the classic group. It's Peppy Hare is, I think, the one kind of commanding things from off-site. And then in the field, you've got Falco, Fox, and Slippy. And just like in the past games, you've got to watch each other's backs. No mention of Crystal. And that would make sense, because if this game is meant to kind of be alongside or stand alongside Star Fox 64 in the chronology, Crystal hasn't been introduced yet. She made her debut in Star Fox Adventures. Personally, I'm not the biggest Crystal fan. I don't mean to upset any Crystal fans out there, so that's fine by me. It's more of a purist approach to the series. Although they did have I did catch a glimpse of a new female fox, like a red fox or something. So maybe Crystal's got some competition there for Fox McCloud. And even just within the level, like I mentioned, you've got the transformations and things like that. But even within the first level that they demoed, there were lots of different phases to the level. It was like a three-part level. Like, it starts out looking very much like the first level of Star Fox 64, but quickly changes and ramps up, and you get on different paths, and then you're involved in a really prolonged, multi-staged boss fight. And it just seemed like it was a much deeper gameplay than before. Now, people who kept a close eye on E3 last year will probably remember that Miyamoto showed off two, I guess you would call them demos, that he hoped to potentially turn into full-fledged games. And at the time, in interviews, he said he wasn't sure whether he was going to incorporate these into Star Fox somehow or package them as their own unique titles. One was Project Guard, the game, if you'll remember, where you had to defend a base against a lot of intruding robots by keeping an eye on lots of different monitors. And then there was a Project Robo, or sorry, I think it was Giant Robo, where to giant robots fought each other, and you moved the robot and by tilting the gamepad, and there were lots of customization options. And to be honest, Project Guard, people seemed to dig that, and it looked like it would be fun. To me, it looked like it would be fun for maybe the first few times, but would get old quick. Project Robo just looked like a tech demo, and I didn't think it looked like it really had any, at least in that form, any real shot at being a great fun game. So I guess it's no surprise then that the official word apparently is that Project Guard is still being developed, and it's actually being developed along with Platinum, just like Star Fox is. But it hasn't yet been decided if it's going to be a part of the Star Fox game or released alongside of it, or if it will even be released at all, it sounds like. And apparently Giant Robo is officially on hold, and doesn't seem like we're going to see that one again anytime soon. Now, clearly this is Nintendo's big holiday game of the year, and it's deserving. I mean, I think if Zelda Wii U had still been on track for this season, then that would have been an amazing 1-2 punch. I wouldn't traditionally think of a Star Fox game as being the year's AAA killer app. But it looks like a really solid title that I would maybe place on a tier right below that. So, if you've got to take your Zelda game out of the year, at least you've got something of this kind of quality to fall back on. One last little note here about Star Fox Zero is that Miyamoto, I saw, said in an interview with IGN that they're working on R-Wing Amiibo, which is no surprise to me. And actually, I've been hoping that's what they would do instead of simply re-releasing a new Fox McCloud figure or, double Falco figures, that they would actually focus on the ships, because that's really what the series focuses on. I'd love to see Landmaster Amiibo, and Amiibo for all of them, actually. He only mentioned the R-Wing Amiibo, but the crazy thing is he talked about that they're experimenting with making it transformable, that this Amiibo would actually change between the two modes that the R-Wing can change between in the game. And presumably, I guess, I mean, this is me totally speculating, but the game would recognize which mode it's in, and that might have an effect as to what it does in the game. He also said that the Falco Amiibo that's coming out, the Smash Falco Amiibo that's coming out around the same time this holiday season, would do something in the game too. And it's an easy bet that the Smash Fox Amiibo would also unlock something. So, holiday season game probably means December, maybe late November if we're lucky. And, it looks awesome. I'm going to get it day one. How about you, Hoff?
Day zero.
I see what you did there. All right, next up is they announced the next thing that came up in the Direct, just going through the Direct item by item, they announced that there will be two new Skylanders figures that are Nintendo characters. One is a special version of Bowser, and one is a special version of Donkey Kong. They will actually have little switches on the bottom that will switch them between traditional Skylander functionality and Amiibo functionality. And I need to find out more about this, but I suspect their Amiibo functionality would make them, as far as unlocking content in games, would just make them the same as, like, games would recognize them as if they were the Smash versions of Bowser or Donkey Kong or the Mario Party version of Bowser, maybe. Although I would be surprised if they actually had any storage set aside for those games inside the figures. But I could be wrong about that. It's for the game, the new Skylanders game, Skylanders Superchargers, which focuses on vehicles as well as characters. And true to form, the Bowser character has a vehicle, clown plane. And Donkey Kong has a vehicle as well. So I guess that's pretty cool. I mean, obviously, Amiibo and Skylanders, there's a lot of crossover there in terms of the appeal and you know, the toy meets video game category. I don't know, though. I don't know. As an Amiibo collector who's never bought a Skylanders figure, I don't know if I'm going to get these. I mean, ultimately, as long as you can switch to an Amiibo mode, I probably will. Because, like, if I'm in this far with Amiibo, what's two more, I guess? But I don't know. What about you, Hoff?
I'm going to pass on that one.
You're not going to start collecting all the Skylanders figures along with your Amiibo?
Oh, hell no.
All right, Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes for 3DS. This was a surprise. Hoff, Zelda's your favorite series, so I take it you're on board with this?
Oh, yeah.
It's a co-op multiplayer game. Obviously, the first thing you think of is The Legend of Zelda Four Swords Adventures for GameCube. Only instead of four-player, this one's three-player, which I actually like. You know, it's hard for me to get, you know, even two players together these days to play a game a lot of times. But three is certainly easier than four. But this looks pretty cool. It even supports online multiplayer, which blows me away. I mean, I'm looking at that. I wrote that down in my notes. But it seems so strange for Nintendo to include online multiplayer in a Zelda game that I feel like I've got to go double and triple check that. So again, don't send me too much hate mail if I got that wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's what they said. But true to Nintendo form, it doesn't look like there'll be any voice chat because in the demonstration in Treehouse Live, it was shown using images to communicate with each other, such as simple image illustrations of, hey, let's stack on top of each other, which is something you can do. You can basically stack all three on top like a totem pole, and puzzles are built around that. They had little cheering animations and stuff as well. So I guess you'll be communicating like that. Has the same graphic style as the excellent Link Between Worlds. And in fact, the first thing I thought of when I saw this, or maybe the second or third thing, was that this seems to be in the vein of Captain Toad, which is they had already made a game, in this case, A Link Between Worlds, and in Captain Toad's case, Super Mario 3D World. They already had a bunch of assets and a bunch of everything you need to like get a game rolling and start development fast, and then they just work on it, and it eventually kind of becomes its own thing. I remember, I believe it was Iwata, maybe Miyamoto, a while back, spoke, I think, at an investor briefing about this being an ongoing strategy of theirs, to look for these opportunities where they can get more back from their investment in these big AAA titles, where they actually take some of the assets and stuff that they've already invested in these other games, just spin them out into new games. And I think that's great as long as the games feel like real full-fledged games and not like, like also-rans or lame small bonus modes of these other games. And Captain Toad was an amazing game, especially for the price. And this looks like it'll be its own thing as well. So the more the merrier. If that helps them get more quality games out, I don't have any problem with that approach. One of the wackiest elements of this game is that it's introducing, what do they call them? Just new costumes. Like this game actually takes place in a kingdom of what they described as fashion-savvy people. And apparently there's tons of costumes you can unlock. By putting the different ones on, you gain different abilities. And so, obviously, between the three members of your party, that's one thing that you'll consider as a team is who's going to take what abilities into battle and how they complement each other. So that's a pretty awesome addition. Plus, it's just, kind of zany fun to see Link walking around dressed like, there's even as a Zelda costume he can walk around in Zelda's dress. So it's kind of neat to see them doing wacky new experimental things with Zelda. And I guess I don't know much more about that, about this game at the moment, other than that it's coming out in fall. And, it's no replacement for Zelda Wii U, obviously, but any Zelda is good Zelda, and this one looks pretty cool. And speaking of Zelda, Hyrule Warriors Legends for 3DS. Obviously, this game was leaked like a week ago. Everybody knew it about it already. It's the exact same game, scaled down graphically to work on the 3DS. It includes all the DLC characters from the Wii U version, so no reason to have to rebuy those all, I guess. And they've added a couple new characters from Wind Waker, Tetra, and the King of Red Lions, I believe he's called, the King of Old Hyrule that, spoiler alert, turns into a boat that you get to ride around in. And apparently, from the footage we saw in the trailer, he turns into a boat to just jump on people, which is pretty cool, I guess. So it's cool to see those guys in there, especially Tetra. I'm a big fan of that character.
I just want to see Groose in the game.
Yeah, Groose would be cool, too. He would have made a lot of sense in Hyrule Warriors. But, maybe they're not done with DLC. We'll find out. I guess the big question is, for people who already put dozens of hours into the Wii U game, and if you played all the modes, I mean, some of those modes you could put 100 hours into easy trying to unlock everything. Will those people want to do it? I mean, like, and Hav, you did this. So would you want to do all of this all over again?
I would rather drown in a pool of my own vomit.
That's a box quote if I've ever heard one. The game comes out in the first quarter of next year, so sometime in the first 3 months. All right. The next game, Metroid Prime Federation Force.
I don't know what they're thinking.
Yeah. I tell you what. If I try to be as objective about this as possible, and I just look at the footage, and I just watch the playthroughs on the live streams, it doesn't look like a bad game. I don't know that it looks like an outstanding game. The environments are a little bland. The characters are a little cutesy for that type of game. If it wasn't called Metroid, I think I'd be fine with it. But to not have a Metroid since Metroid Other M, which has been years and years now, and then to see that Metroid logo come up, and it's this, it's like a punch in the gut. I mean, nothing against the developers, and I think I've read that this is from Next Level. I'm not 100% sure on that, but if that's true, these guys are quality. They've done some great, great stuff. But, I mean, come on. I mean, Samus doesn't even look like Samus is going to be in this game. It's Metroid in name only. It's four-player co-op in the Metroid Prime universe, as they say. You can play it local or online, so that's cool. It includes Metroid Prime Blast Ball, which was teased in the Nintendo World Championships a couple of days earlier. It's kind of like a weird side game where mechs play space soccer. I don't know. It's got a very Metroid Prime Hunters vibe to it, and people didn't really love that game. I did watch the demo on Treehouse Live, like I said. My first impression is that it looks a little bland, as I said. But it could be a fun way to play with friends. I just wish it wasn't Metroid. And, you know, I've had a negative opinion of other games that have turned me around recently, like the Puzzle & Dragons Mario title. So I will definitely hold judgment for this, but again, show me a real Metroid, Nintendo, come on. Next up in the Direct was the Fire Emblem Fates is the full name. It was just called Fire Emblem If before. That's the Japanese title. It's kind of a weird title. It was never going to fly over here. So Fire Emblem Fates is what we get. It comes out in 2016. Not too much new was said about it, just a nice trailer, which some really nice story teases. And I really, really loved Fire Emblem Awakening. It's kind of, I'd played previous games in the series, but that was the one that really turned me into a fan. So I am mega on board with this one. It's got two campaigns. I'm not entirely sure if it's been fully confirmed how those are going to work here in the U.S., but they're selling them as two separate packages in Japan, just like when you buy two versions of the new Pokemon game. There'll be two versions of Fire Emblem. In any case, 2016 looks amazing. Not much new to say there.
I am really looking forward to that one.
Yep, yep. All right, I'm going to pronounce this wrong. Gane Ibun Roku #FE, which I guess is the official Japanese name for the project formerly known as Fire Emblem times Shin Megami Tensei. We've seen this before. And this video really just solidified the opinion that we had of it before. It looks like a J-pop Hello Kitty Wonderland of craziness that will never fly in America. Obviously, people who really have an appreciation for Japanese games or Japanese culture, basically everybody who you see at Barnes & Noble reading manga in the manga aisle will love this game. If it's good, I mean, I guess they'll love the style of it, maybe. I personally don't feel strongly for it one way or the other, but it just seems like such a game that won't do any real... or won't really have any success here in the West, which I guess shouldn't be my primary concern. I should be concerned as a gamer if it's a fun game, but you still can't help look at it and just kind of scratch your head a little bit. But who knows? Maybe a insanely Japanese game is exactly what Nintendo needs in the West right now.
I don't know about that.
Next up in the digital event was Xenoblade Chronicles X. We've been hearing about this game a lot over the past year since last E3. It's actually out in Japan now. And unfortunately, the kind of early reviews or feedback on it that I've read lately, and I don't know if this speaks for a large number of people, but it just so happens that the ones I've read seem to have very middling opinions of the game. They say that it's, I think Kotaku famously was quoted as saying that if they had to describe the game in one word, it would be boring. But, you know, when you listen to their complaints about it, most of it seems like you could apply that to the first game as well. I mean, Xenoblade Chronicles for Wii and the remake for 3DS, there are, I mean, it's a lot of running and just kind of grinding on monsters and just running across big empty spaces of land. And there are long periods of time in that game where there's nothing particularly thrilling happening in the story. Now, I really like the game despite that, and I'm not even a big RPG guy. So I don't know that this the early kind of response to this to the sequel has turned me off of a game at all. But I guess a little more troubling is people have said that the story itself isn't as interesting. They miss the fact that in the first game you had an actual protagonist who was heavily involved in the story. He was a character. It was Shulk who really got built up throughout the course of the game. And I guess people had, you know, been concerned for a while that Xenoblade Chronicles X might miss some of that because you get to create your own avatar, who essentially, I, from what I understand, is a little more like Link in Zelda games. He kind of observes the action, but other than what you do with him, he doesn't really involve himself in the story very much. So, yeah, I'll keep my fingers crossed that that it's a little bit better than what I've been hearing. But even if the criticisms are fair, I still feel like you could have applied most of that to the first game, and hey, I like the first game, so whatevs. Hoff, what do you think? Is Xenoblade Chronicles X going to fall flat?
No way.
Well, there you go. That's all I needed to hear. Comes out December 4th, by the way. Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer for 3DS.
Holy crap, my mind is blown.
Are you being serious right now? Well, I thought it looked pretty good, actually.
Well, it's no Phoenix Wright, but okay. You know what would be even better? Mr. T was in it.
Yeah. Mr. T should be in every game. That's what you always say. But actually, I think, you know, here's another game that looks like it's been built on the back of existing code and assets. It looks like they may have actually, at least for a certain segment of the Animal Crossing fan base, made something that is even more appealing. I know a lot of Animal Crossing players that love the more creative aspect of the series. They love to decorate their house. They love to create clothes, anything that involves them being creative. But they've gotten tired of the constant chore aspects of the game, just the little things you do just so you can get the money to do the other things. So if they've managed to cut out, you know, all of the stuff that is, you know, the repetitive stuff that isn't necessarily what people, or some people at least, would play the game for, and they've just distilled it down to the good stuff, essentially, then I think for a lot of people who just dig collecting the items and interacting with the cute characters and being in that world and creating things, this could be a real step in the right direction for the franchise. So is this a side game, or is this potentially the series kind of just evolving in a direction that could, like I said, for a lot of people, be even better? And I'm just happy to see it evolve at all, because as much as I love that franchise and it's charming as hell, after playing, you know, to some degree, basically every version of it in a row, and they're all very, very samey. You do 90% the same thing in every game. I'm just ready for something different. Like, I want to keep being excited about Animal Crossing, and if they had shown a new full-fledged game, I would have been excited. I probably would have bought it out of habit. My kids would have loved it, but I don't know if I would have spent that much time with it myself unless it had been significantly different from what I've already put hundreds of hours into. So, yeah, I like that they're trying something different with this. Hopefully it's cool. It's essentially like those home design shows where the designers send the residents away and then surprise them with a remodel of their home, only they've built a game around that somehow. And it uses the Amiibo cards. There's this like little phone in the game that one of the characters has supposedly made. And use it's the Amiibo phone, and you scan the playing cards that you'll be able to buy, and it actually brings the character on the card into the game through that phone, and I hope the cards are readily available at lots of places, because apparently there's going to be 100 of them, and that's just the first set. There'll be more after that, so hopefully the pricing's all right. And oh my God, hopefully they're not. I mean, in a dream world, you'd just buy. Every pack would have cards that are different in it. I mean, if you get doubles of these cards and triples and you have to trade them with friends, that's how trading cards usually work, but come on. If you're just trying to unlock something in a game and you got to go through that business, that's not going to be very fun. But I like the idea of Amiibo cards more than anything. That's probably going to get me to play it, because Amiibo's really got me hooked, and I loved collecting them. And I like that they're trying different types of things with the cards. I just hope I don't go broke trying to buy all this stuff.
There goes all my money for the rest of the year.
No kidding. Also, the game isn't as limited as I first thought. It looks like you can walk around the town to some degree. You can enter different buildings. You can decorate the house's exterior as well as its interior. So the scope of it seems to be a bit bigger than what I originally, the impression it originally made on me when it was first revealed. I don't know, I'm cautiously optimistic. Actually, not even cautiously, I think this will be fun. It comes out September 25th. Now, this next game, I probably know the least about because I only know what they showed on the Direct. I haven't seen any live streams of it yet. But, I mean, my initial impression, I got to imagine it's the same for a lot of people, is pretty disappointing. Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival. It's not a new full-on Animal Crossing game, but a board game like Mario Party.
I don't know what they're thinking.
Yeah. It uses a new Amiibo. I'm actually more excited about the Amiibo. The new set includes Tom Nook, Isabelle, KK Slider, Mabel, Lottie, Cyrus, Reese, and Digby. And, they each have their own, as you'd expect from a distinct series of Amiibo, their own little stands that have little grassy designs on them. They're super cute. It's got my little girl actually really wanting Amiibo now just to get these. So Nintendo must know what they're doing. But still, a board game. I mean, if it's a good board game, it's a good board game. But again, I think this was kind of the problem overall with the with this digital event was that Nintendo, like your favorite Nintendo franchises in a lot of ways, showed up, but then they let you down. Like, people really want a full-on Animal Crossing game for Wii U. And even though I personally would, if we saw one, I would hope that it would be significantly different and refreshed. I mean, that's what I would want to see, a new evolved kind of console Animal Crossing. But instead of that, you get the board game. And instead of a real Metroid game, you get, you know, that little side, whatever it is. I understand the reaction to all this. But then again, to play devil's advocate, maybe the Animal Crossing board game is fantastic. People love Mario Party. It's stuck around this long, so who's to say an Animal Crossing version won't be fun? It comes out this holiday season, which probably means late November, December. Yoshi's Woolly World. This game keeps looking better and better.
You are totally right, Slate.
I mean, there wasn't much in here we hadn't seen before. They had already shown recently that you can use pretty much any amiibo, I think with few exceptions, to give your Yoshi's distinct looking designs patterned off those other characters. I guess the thing we saw here is that, you know, one little new element is that Poochie, the little dog that's been in the past Yoshi's Island games, will bark when an item's nearby. So apparently you can use him to help find the collectibles you might otherwise miss. It just looks like a ton of fun. I'm bummed, though. I'm really ticked off that we got to wait until October 16th to play that game when it comes out this month, like at the end of June in the UK. Who knows why these schedules are set the way they're set? But to me, I can't say this for sure, but it just feels to me like, okay, Zelda Wii U got pushed into next year, so that drug a lot of stuff back in the schedule, so they had big key releases they could spread out further, which is a bummer. But when it does come out, no matter when it comes out, I'll be super stoked to play it. Next up in the Direct was Yo-Kai Watch for 3DS. That's been a massive, massive hit in Japan, that series. It's another Pokemon phenomenon over there. It's an anime. It's a couple of games so far. It's merchandising. It's a monster. And it looks pretty interesting.
I am really looking forward to that one.
Yeah. I mean, I've played Pokemon games in the past, but I didn't get in on the ground floor, and I've always felt like it's too much of a... I mean, this is just me, and, you know, I don't have a ton of free time to play as many games as I'd want. It just looks like it would take a huge investment to get into a Pokemon game today without the knowledge of having played the past ones. But here's an opportunity with Yo-Kai Watch to get into something similar to that on the ground floor. And I'm not going to miss my chance this time. I'm going to hop in there. I'm going to try it out. It's a silly premise. It's actually very Japanese because the yokai are essentially ghosts, although they're not officially called ghosts. Ghost/Pokemon-type monsters, however you want to think of them. But they're all based, or at least a lot of them seem to be based in traditional Japanese folklore, like their versions of ghosts and zombies and things like that. But it's got this weird quirk to it, whereas it's essentially like if there's someone who is cold in the bath, then maybe it's because they're being haunted by the yokai of making people cold in the bath. So it seems pretty silly, but I love silly. So I'm definitely going to check it out. Here's hoping they recreate the Pokemon success. The next one was a really cool surprise, and I actually kind of called this. It's Mario & Luigi Paper Jam, a new Mario game, and not just a new Mario & Luigi game, but the first game that is basically half Mario & Luigi and Paper Mario, two Mario RPG series, both of them combined.
Holy crap, my mind is blown.
Right? It's from Alpha Dream, who makes all the Mario & Luigi games. And like I said, it combines those two series. It's coming out spring next year. And hopefully this will be the game for people that didn't like Paper Mario Sticker Star, which I did, but I totally get why it gets a bad rap. Hopefully this will be a return to form for the Mario RPG games. You get to take advantage of both the Paper Mario kind of mechanics and the Mario & Luigi mechanics. It's a true kind of collaboration in that way. And it just looks like, for both of the series, kind of the wackiest, most out there version yet. And the Treehouse guys were talking up how it's going to have that kind of patented humor for the Mario RPG series. And it was a total surprise. Except, maybe not as big as a surprise to me, because just the other day, and Hoff will have to confirm this because it was off the air, but just the other day we were having lunch, and I said, I actually predict that we're going to see a new Mario & Luigi game. And he hemmed and hawed a little bit and thought maybe it hadn't been that long since the last one. But he could see it, so I'm not really saying that he was wrong. But I definitely placed that bet. So yay me. Next up was Mario Tennis Ultra Smash, which, yeah, I mean, I'm going to buy it because I just buy all the Mario Sports games. And it looks like it could be cool. The graphics were nice. I don't know. I just don't get excited about Mario Tennis games or Mario Golf games anymore like I used to. Maybe I would if they had more RPG-ish elements. And maybe I should research this game more before I speak about it, because maybe it has something like that. But, yeah, I just feel like I've played so many of them, and they usually don't have any kind of great long-term single-player campaigns. I really wish they'd bring back those RPG elements from the Game Boy Color titles back in the day. But so I'm not thrilled right now, but I'm curious enough to learn more, and like I said, I'll probably get it anyway. Comes out this holiday season. Now, Super Mario Maker. This is my front runner for Game of the Year.
It was probably the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I'll buy two copies of that one.
That's right. It looks incredible. And again, to the point of why this Direct maybe didn't go over so well with a lot of people, we've seen Mario Maker for a year now. We've seen tons of it. It was just the main focus of the final round of the Nintendo World Championships a couple days ago. We got to see a lot of it there. So it wasn't terribly exciting to see it pop up here, but I'll tell you, every time they show that game and they show you a little bit something different, it just blows me away every time. Just how easy it's going to be to make levels, how you'll get to pretty much make anything you can think of, it looks like, how every little element is in there, from Yoshi to things you wouldn't have even expected, like being able to wear a buzzy beetle or a spiny shell on your head to protect your head. It has costume Mario now, we found out, where you can use Amiibo to make your Mario look like other characters. Now, so far I've only seen this in Super Mario Bros. 1 mode, the NES graphic style. But they even had little sprite versions of Wii Fit Trainer running around, and there was one of Link. So the idea that you could pop them in the game, and from what I understand, it's just cosmetic. They still act like Mario. But that's pretty amazing, and that's a great use of Amiibo. Because where else are you going to see an old 8-bit pixel version of Wii Fit Trainer or characters like that that didn't even exist back then? That's pretty special. And speaking of Amiibo, the holiest of holy amiibo now has got to be the 8-bit Mario amiibo that is branded with Mario's 30th, Super Mario Brothers 30th anniversary. It's actually pretty ginormous for an amiibo. And I guess the reason they said that is because its effect in the game is it actually puts a big mushroom into the game, kind of like a mega mushroom in some other past Mario platformers that you can put into a level. And then if your character grabs it, if Mario grabs it, he becomes giant. Again, just like a Mega Mario, where you can just stomp through things. So that's a fun little addition. It's basically hiding one little piece of a level design element behind an amiibo. Now, I wouldn't want them to do that with a ton of stuff, but for one special item, I think that's pretty cool. And even if that amiibo didn't unlock anything, who doesn't want a pixel art Mario that's branded for Mario's 30th anniversary? That's just the ultimate collectible. And unfortunately, it's probably going to be, you know, hellacious to get hold of, like every amiibo is. You're going to, I mean, that just goes without saying. Any of these amiibos, excited as I am to have them, I'm just dreading having to buy them, watch for the pre-orders online, line up at places, and go through that whole rigmarole. But once I own it, I'm going to really enjoy it. And it comes in two different versions, actually. I missed that initially, so maybe some other people did too. One of the version of the Pixel Mario amiibo is colored with Mario's classic colors. If you remember, his classic colors from the original Super Mario Brothers weren't, you know, necessarily the same bright primary colors. He was more of a grayish sleeves and slightly different skin tone, I think. And then they have the more current colors that you would expect of Mario. They have, so it's the same sculpt, the same amiibo, but colored two different ways. And the game also comes up with Tezuka even showed it off. Sorry, Tezuka, who's the director of the game, even showed it off during a live stream where they were demoing the game. There's a booklet that is just filled with images of wacky things you can do, wacky things you could build in the game just to kind of give you ideas, kind of like an IKEA catalog where you're supposed to look through and see the collections and get ideas from all the nice photos. And each page, each idea has a code on it. And if you type that code into the game, apparently, you will get to see a video of that element being put into a level and being used. And these videos act as kind of tutorials. So it's nice to see that in the game because, again, this whole thing is about essentially like a, hey, you want to make games? This is like your starter kit. And having tutorials like that is a great idea. And it was confirmed earlier, too, that there are going to be pre-made levels loaded into the game, but I've yet to find out how many there are if there's any particular point to them other than just having some early levels you can kind of play and experiment with kind of tweaking to get the hang of the game. Like, it'd be great if they recreated some of the levels from past games to put in there, or if they created whole new games, and again, in effect, this game would then become its own platformer, even if you didn't want to make anything. But actually, to that end, you'll be able to play this game endlessly because even if you don't make your own stuff, you'll be able to download and play all the levels everyone else makes. And I also found out this little tidbit watching the live stream. I think people will need to be able to beat the level they made before they can upload it. So the game somehow will know that this game, this level you've made is beatable. And I'm sure that'll keep a lot of just quick junk out of, you know, the digital kind of space, so you're not downloading stuff that is just inherently broken and can't be played. That was a great move by Nintendo to do that. So, Hoff, what do you think? We've got two new amiibos specifically made for this game and celebrating the 30th anniversary. And I think we even may have said this in the last podcast, that how could Nintendo miss the opportunity to have a pixel art Mario for this game and for the 30th anniversary? So that's another one we called. So what do you think? Are you intimidated about trying to get both of those?
I'm going to line up for 4 weeks to get that one.
Yeah, you'll have to, won't you? Well, that's the negative side of having awesome things. The game comes out September 11th. Finally, the Direct ended on a curious note. I mean, when Reggie shows up at the end of a Direct, and certainly at the end of a Nintendo Digital E3, or E3 Digital Event, I think they call it, you expect, you're always, you know, he's saying basically, thanks for watching, E3 continues on, look for more, blah, blah, blah. But you always expect him at the end to say, we got one more thing. And that to be a Twilight Princess reveal type moment that's going to blow your socks off. This time, it was essentially telling you to go online to this website, what is it, letssupermario.com, to share your own videos of just you celebrating Mario and, I guess, playing music from Mario and dressing up as Mario and being silly. I mean, it's a fun marketing-driven way to recognize the 30th anniversary of Super Mario Brothers. But again, oh, and it benefits charity. That should be pointed out. Apparently it benefits a charity called Operation Smile. But, you know, geez, that's how you're going to end it? Again, it's not so much what they showed. Well, in some cases it was. No matter where you put that Metroid game, it wasn't going to make Metroid fans happy. But it was like a lot of it was just how you presented it, where you placed it in the Nintendo Direct. And ending on that, I mean, it's great to start with Star Fox. You kind of like kick things off with a bang. But looking at where they ended, maybe they should have ended with Star Fox, because you want to send people home happy. You want their last impression from that Direct to be, yeah, that was awesome. But the fact that you had Mario Maker, which again is my early Game of the Year candidate, but we'd already seen so much of it, it wasn't a particularly exciting segment. And then that segues into this social Mario thing. It really ended on a whimper. So I got to criticize him on that. I mean, as much as I love most of the stuff that was shown in that event, it's kind of hard to defend it against the haters, you know, when they make such a blunder there at the end. I mean, you're going to end it on social media stuff?
That pretty much says it all.
Yeah, that's about all I need to say about that. All right, well, to wrap up, where was Retro? I'm hoping that in the next couple of days of the show, sometime before the next podcast, the new Retro game will pop up, and that it won't be, you know what, Retro's the developer behind this other thing people weren't very excited about. I guess the one positive or silver lining for the new Metroid title we did see is that Retro hasn't shown up yet. So there's still hope that they could be working on a real Metroid game for Wii U or 3DS, and that maybe we'll just find out about it. I don't know. Maybe it seems like the kind of thing you'd unveil at E3. Maybe we don't find out about it until next year's show. Or maybe at this point they're working on it as a killer launch game for NX. Who knows? I mean, that's a big question that kept popping into my head, actually, as I watched this. You know, so many of the titles we saw were titles we saw last year, and that's unfortunately becoming common amongst all the game publishers, since it takes much, much longer to make quality games these days. But I don't know. I just got the sense that it wouldn't surprise me if some of the reason that we didn't see many big new surprises, that they didn't tease anything coming out, let's say, towards mid to late next year, like a lot of other companies would, was because they're starting to switch development teams over toward the NX. I mean, it's got to happen soon. They've said they'll talk more about NX next year, so presumably they're going to unveil specifics about it at E3 next year. And if they're going to do that, then you'd think, well, maybe that means it's going to launch at the end of next year, or at the very least in 2017. And now that it takes, you know, in this generation, it takes at least a couple of years to make a real quality, top-notch AAA game. So we're coming to the point now where they have to start deciding, as teams finish their current projects, are they going to set them on to work on Wii U and 3DS games? Or is it time to move them up to NX games, so that when they launch the NX, they have some quality software available and they don't run into the same problem they've run into with the last few systems, really pretty much every one of their systems with few exceptions, where they launch and they don't have enough games to meet demand. They have these long stretches of time, months, where they don't have any quality new titles. So, I mean, I'll be excited about the NX when it comes out. And if it's a superior system, then, you know, it'll have been worth the wait when you finally do get to play those games. But in the meantime, it's not going to be very fun. But that's a little bit of a doom and gloom scenario. I mean, they certainly had plenty of games on this, so I don't mean to paint too negative a picture there. Hopefully, even when NX development does ramp up, they still find some way to provide something on an ongoing basis to their current customers or their current systems. And DLC will probably play a big role in that. I mean, maybe we'll still be getting Smash and Mario Kart and Splatoon DLC all the way into the NX. I saw all the major press conferences, or at least the three main platform holder ones. I thought Xbox One did a solid job. To be honest, I always thought that their press conferences were the least exciting, even when they've had decent games. I don't know why. Maybe that sounds biased. It's just, and it probably is to some degree my personal preference in titles. I'm not the biggest kind of dude bro first-person shooter fan, and that's predominantly what's defined their brand over the past few years. But although I'll say this, comparing the three press conferences, the two, and the Nintendo Digital event, I'm certainly going to buy more of the games that I saw in the Nintendo Digital event. These are my kind of games. I'm a lifelong Nintendo fan. They look great. In my opinion, Nintendo really shouldn't, even if people aren't digging the Direct, they shouldn't hang their head too low. They're working on some amazing stuff, and they've been making some great moves lately. So I think they're definitely headed in the right direction overall. But objectively, looking at it from a broader perspective, if I had to pick a winner, to be honest, I'd probably say Sony's press conference was the one that most people will come away this year thinking, oh, Sony won E3. And it's for three simple reasons. They unveiled three huge, huge games that were total surprises that actually people had given up hope would ever exist. The Last Guardian, Shenmue 3, and Final Fantasy VII Remake. I mean, it was basically a fan fiction press conference for them. Like, that's what you'd write and no one would believe it. It's just wishful thinking. And it happened. And yeah, those games were all just, with the exception of The Last Guardian, were just trailers. Shenmue was just a trailer for a Kickstarter. But again, it comes back to presentation. You know, PlayStation 4 games aren't, great PlayStation 4 games aren't coming out any faster than Wii U games, that's for sure. Wii U, in my opinion, still has by far the best library of this current generation. But they put on a great show, and they got people excited, and they had great cheer moments, and they knew the fans would go nuts when they saw this stuff, and they sent them home happy. And I think, you know, there's a lesson there. Nintendo's done that in the past. It's not like they don't know how to do that. In some years, they have more opportunities to do that than not, depending on what cards they're still holding. But even with what they presented this year, I think they could have done a better job just in presenting it if they just rearranged some stuff. So I guess my overall final opinion of this press conference, or rather the Nintendo Digital event for E3 2015, not nearly as negative as most people. In hindsight, I think everything that they showed, or most of what they showed, was great, great stuff. They just mishandled some of it, and there were a couple projects. And again, I don't mean to keep kicking that Metroid 3DS title while it's down, but it's a game that no Metroid fan would have asked for. And from the beginning, from this moment on, it's going to have to prove itself over and over again to people, even if it's a great, fun, quality game on its own, and it very well might be. I'm sure the developers, especially if it's next level, are putting their all into it. But, you know, because of just missteps and miscues with things like that and the way they pace the show, I think that's the reason why it's getting, it's kind of falling flat with a lot of people. And what about you, Hoff? Or Hoffbot, I should say. Any final thoughts about this presentation?
Where were all the Mega Man games?
Yeah, well, you can say that every year, can't you? You'll just have to be happy with Mighty No. 9. All right, well, before we go, Hoff left a little something else for this episode alongside the Hoffbot 9000.
And now it is time for a dramatic reading. This time, the back of the box of Section Z. Planet Earth, in the year 2XXX. You are relaxing at the console of your computerized superconductor-generated interplanetary satellite communication system. Suddenly, high-frequency radio and television transmissions blast warnings to all inhabitants to prepare for the brutal invading forces of Balan Ghul Empire. You take control to defend and preserve the lives and freedoms of the people on planet Earth. You shed your earthly identity. You unite with freedom fighter Captain Commando to become the one remaining astronaut in space. Concealed in your special solar-energized jet-propelled supersonic spacesuit, fully armed with quick-firing multi-directional weaponry, you leave Earth on your death-defying mission. The mission: battle and defeat the space soldiers of Balin Ghul. Penetrate their base divided in Section A through Section Z. Then destroy Balin Ghul Master Control, L-Brain. You and Captain Commando must maneuver safely through four levels of superbly animated vertical and horizontal adventurous scene scrolling to destroy L-Brain. Will you and Captain Commando penetrate Section Z and defeat the Balin Ghul Empire? You control the future of planet Earth.
That's it for this week. Whew, we made it through, Hoffbot. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow The Hoff on Twitter, at Chris The Hoff, and I'm at Chris Slate. Hoff also has a cool blog called Still Playing With Power, which you can find at christhehoff.tumblr.com. If you want to email us, please do. We're at powerprospod@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, as always, we'd really appreciate it if you'd find it on iTunes and rate it for us. And hey, thanks a lot to everyone who has. It's really great to pop in there every now and again and see another great review. Really, really appreciate it. So for myself, Chris Hoffman.
I'm at E3, bitches.
And our pal Yoshi.
Yahoo!
We'll see you next time.
I need more gas for my chainsaw.